This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. And for more information or to find out how to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This recording is by Kristen Lemoyne, greenkri.com. The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus by L. Frank Baum. Chapter 4 of Santa Claus's Adulthood. How Little Mary Became Frightened. The winter was over now, and all the Laughing Valley was filled with joyous excitement. The brook was so happy at being free once again that it gurgled more boisterously than ever, and dashed so recklessly against the rocks that it sent showers of spray high in the air. The grass thrust its sharp little blades upward through the mat of dead stalks, where it had hidden from the snow. But the flowers were yet too timid to show themselves, although the rills were busy feeding their roots. The sun was in remarkably good humor, and sent his rays dancing merrily throughout the valley. Claus was eating his dinner one day, when he heard a timid knock on his door. "Come in," he called. No one entered, but after a pause came another rapping. Claus jumped up and threw open the door. Before him stood a small girl, holding a smaller brother fast by the hand. "Is you Claus?" she asked shyly. "Indeed I am, my dear," he answered with a laugh, as he caught both children in his arms and kissed them. "You are very welcome, and you have come just in time to share my dinner." He took them to the table and fed them with fresh milk and nut cakes. When they had eaten enough, he asked, "Why have you made this long journey to see me?"
"I want a cat,"
replied little Mary, and her brother, who had not yet learned to speak many words, nodded his head and exclaimed like an echo, "Cat." "Oh, you want my toy cats, do you?" returned Claus, greatly pleased to discover that his creations were so popular with children. The little visitors nodded eagerly. "Unfortunately," he continued, "I have but one cat now ready, for I carried two to children in town yesterday, and the one I have shall be given to your brother, Mary, because he is the smaller, and the next one I make shall be for you." The boy's face was bright with smiles as he took the precious toy Claus held out to him. But little Mary covered her face with her arm and began to sob grievously.
"I want a cat now," she wailed.
Her disappointment made Claus feel miserable for a moment. Then he suddenly remembered Shiegra.
"Don't cry, darling," he said soothingly. "I have a toy much nicer than a cat, and you shall have that."
He went to the cupboard and drew out the image of the lioness, which he placed on the table before Mary. The girl raised her arm and gave one glance at the fierce teeth and glaring eyes of the beast, and then, uttering a terrified scream, she rushed from the house. The boy followed her, also screaming lustily, and even dropping his precious cat in his fear. For a moment, Claus stood motionless, being puzzled and astonished. Then he threw Shiegra's image into the cupboard and ran after the children, calling to them not to be frightened. Little Mary stopped in her flight, and her brother clung to her skirt, but they both cast fearful glances at the house until Claus had assured them many times that the beast had been locked in the cupboard.
"Yet why were you frightened at seeing it?" he asked. "It is only a toy to play with." "It's bad," said Mary decidedly, and just horrid, and not a bit nice like cats."
"Perhaps you are right," returned Claus thoughtfully. "But if you will return with me to the house, I will soon make you a pretty cat." So they timidly entered the house again, having faith in their friend's words,
and afterward they had the joy of watching Claus carve out a cat from a bit of wood and paint it in natural colors. It did not take him long to do this, for he had become skillful with his knife by this time, and Mayrie loved her toy the more dearly because she had seen it made. After his little visitors had trotted away on their journey homeward, Claus sat long in deep thought, and he then decided that such fierce creatures as his friend the lioness would never do as models from which to fashion his toys. "There must be nothing to frighten the dear babes," he reflected. "And while I know Shiegra well, and am not afraid of her, it is but natural that children should look upon her image with terror. Hereafter I will choose such mild-mannered animals as squirrels, and rabbits, and deer, and lambkins from which to carve my toys, for then the little ones will love rather than fear them." He began his work that very day, and before bedtime had made a wooden rabbit and a lamb. They were not quite so lifelike as the cats had been, because they were formed from memory, while Blinky had sat very still for Claus to look at while he worked. But the new toys teased the children nevertheless, and the fame of Claus's playthings quickly spread to every cottage on plain and in village. He always carried his gifts to the sick or crippled children, but those who were strong enough walked to the house in the valley to ask for them. So a little path was soon worn from the plain to the door of the toy maker's cottage. First came the children who had been playmates of Claus before he began to make toys. These, you may be sure, were well supplied. Then children who lived farther away heard of the wonderful images and made journeys to the valley to secure them. All the little ones were welcome, and never a one went away empty-handed. This demand for his handiwork kept Claus busily occupied, but he was quite happy in knowing the pleasure he gave to so many of the dear children. His friends, the immortals, were pleased with his success and supported him bravely. The Knook selected for him clear pieces of soft wood that his knife might not be blunted in cutting them. The Ryls kept him supplied with paints of all colors and brushes fashioned from the tips of timothy grasses. The Fairies discovered that the workmen needed saws and chisels and hammers and nails as well as knives, and brought him a goodly array of such tools. Claus soon turned his living room into a most wonderful workshop. He built a bench before the window and arranged his tools and paints so that he could reach everything as he sat on his stool, and as he finished toy after toy to delight the hearts of little children, he found himself growing so gay and happy that he could not refrain from singing and laughing and whistling all day long. "It's because I live in the Laughing Valley, where everything else laughs," said Claus. But that was not the reason. End of chapter. Chapter 5 of Claus's Adulthood. How Bessie Blithesome Came to the Laughing Valley. One day, as Claus sat before his door to enjoy the sunshine while he busily carved the head and horns of a toy deer, he looked up and discovered a glittering cavalcade of horsemen approaching through the valley. When they drew nearer, he saw that the band consisted of a score of men-at-arms, clad in bright armor and bearing in their hands spears and battle-axes. In front of these rode little Bessie Blithesome, the pretty daughter of that proud Lord of Lerd who had once driven Claus from his palace. Her palfrey was pure white, its bridle was covered with glittering gems, and its saddle draped with cloth of gold, richly broidered. The soldiers were sent to protect her from harm while she journeyed. Claus was surprised, but he continued to whittle and to sing until the cavalcade drew up before him. Then the little girl leaned over the neck of her palfrey and said, "Please, Mr. Claus, I want a toy." Her voice was so pleading that Claus jumped up at once and stood beside her. But he was puzzled how to answer her request. "You are a rich lord's daughter, said he, "and have all that you desire."
"Except toys," added Bessie. "There are no toys in all the world but yours."
"And I make them for the poor children who have nothing else to amuse them," continued Claus.
"Do poor children love to play with toys more than rich ones?" asked Bessie.
"I suppose not," said Claus thoughtfully.
"Am I to blame because my father is a lord? Must I be denied the pretty toys I long for because other children are poorer than I?" she inquired earnestly.
"I'm afraid you must, dear," he answered, "for the poor have nothing else with which to amuse themselves. You have your pony to ride, your servants to wait on you, and every comfort that money can procure."
"But I want toys," cried Bessie, wiping away the tears that forced themselves into her eyes. "If I cannot have them, I shall be very unhappy."
Claus was troubled, for her grief recalled to him the thought that his desire was to make all children happy, without regard to their condition in life. Yet while so many poor children were clamoring for his toys, he could not bear to give one of them to Bessie Blithesome, who had so much already to make her happy.
"Listen, my child," he said gently. "All the toys I am now making are promised to others, but the next shall be yours, since your heart so longs for it. Come to me again in 2 days, and it shall be ready for you."
Bessie gave a cry of delight, and leaning over her pony's neck, she kissed Claus prettily upon his forehead. Then, calling to her men-at-arms, she rode gaily away, leaving Claus to resume his work.
"If I am to supply the rich children as well as the poor ones," he thought, "I shall not have a spare moment in the whole year. But is it right I should give to the rich? Surely I must go to Necile and talk with her about this matter." So, when he had finished the toy deer, which was very like a deer he had known in the forest glades, he walked into Burzee and made his way to the bower of the beautiful nymph Necile, who had been his foster mother. She greeted him tenderly and lovingly, listening with interest to his story of the visit of Bessie Blithesome.
"And now tell me," said he, "shall I give toys to rich children?"
"We of the forest know nothing of riches," she replied. "It seems to me that one child is like another child, since they are all made of the same clay, and that riches are like a gown, which may be put on or taken away, leaving the child unchanged. But the fairies are guardians of mankind, and know mortal children better than I. Let us call the Fairy Queen." This was done, and the Queen of the Fairies sat beside them, and heard Claus relate his reasons for thinking the rich children could get along without his toys, and also what the nymph had said.
"Necile is right," declared the Queen. "For, whether it be rich or poor, a child's longings for pretty playthings are but natural. Rich Bessie's heart may suffer as much grief as poor Mary's. She can be just as lonely and discontented, and just as gay and happy. I think, friend Claus, it is your duty to make all little ones glad, whether they chance to live in palaces or in cottages."
"Your words are wise, fair queen," replied Claus, "and my heart tells me they are just as they are wise. Hereafter all children may claim my services." Then he bowed before the gracious fairy, and, kissing Necile's red lips, went back into his valley. At the brook he stopped to drink, and afterward he sat on the bank and took a piece of moist clay in his hands, while he thought what sort of toy he should make for Bessie Blithesome. He did not notice that his fingers were working the clay into shape, until, glancing downward, he found he had unconsciously formed a head that bore a slight resemblance to the nymph Necile.
At once he became interested. Gathering more of the clay from the bank, he carried it to his house. Then, with the aid of his knife and a bit of wood, he succeeded in working the clay into the image of a toy nymph. With skillful strokes he formed long, waving hair on the head and covered the body with a gown of oak leaves, while the 2 feet sticking out at the bottom of the gown were clad in sandals. But the clay was soft, and Claus found he must handle it gently to avoid ruining his pretty work. "Perhaps the rays of the sun will draw out the moisture and cause the clay to become hard," he thought. So he laid the image on a flat board and placed it in the glare of the sun. This done, he went to his bench and began painting the toy deer, and soon he became so interested in the work that he forgot all about the clay nymph. But next morning, happening to notice it as it lay on the board, he found the sun had baked it to the hardness of stone, and it was strong enough to be safely handled. Claus now painted the nymph with great care in the likeness of Necile, giving it deep blue eyes, white teeth, rosy lips, and ruddy brown hair. The gown he colored oak leaf green, and when the paint was dry, Claus himself was charmed with the new toy. Of course, it was not nearly so lovely as the real Necile, but considering the material of which it was made, Claus thought it was very beautiful. When Bessie, riding upon her white palfrey, came to his dwelling next day, Claus presented her with the new toy. The little girl's eyes were brighter than ever as she examined the pretty image, and she loved it at once and held it close to her breast, as a mother does to her child. "What is it called, Claus?" she asked. Now, Claus knew that nymphs do not like to be spoken of by mortals, so he could not tell Bessie it was an image of Necile he had given her. But as it was a new toy, he searched his mind for a new name to call it by, and the first word he thought of, he decided would do very well. "It is called a dolly, my dear," he said to Bessie. "I shall call the dolly my baby," returned Bessie, kissing it fondly, "and I shall tend it and care for it just as nurse cares for me. Thank you very much, Claus. Your gift has made me happier than I have ever been before." Then she rode away, hugging the toy in her arms, and Claus, seeing her delight, thought he would make another dolly, better and more natural than the first. He brought more clay from the brook, and remembering that Bessie had called the dolly her baby, he resolved to form this one into a baby's image. That was no difficult task to the clever workman, and soon the baby doll was lying on the board and placed in the sun to dry. Then, with the clay that was left, he began to make an image of Bessie Blithesome herself. This was not so easy, for he found he could not make the silken robe of the lord's daughter out of common clay. So he called the fairies to his aid, and asked them to bring him colored silks with which to make a real dress for the clay image. The fairies set off at once on their errand, and before nightfall they returned with a generous supply of silks and laces and golden threads. Claus now became impatient to complete his new dolly, and instead of waiting for the next day's sun, he placed the clay image upon his hearth and covered it over with glowing coals. By morning, when he drew the dolly from the ashes, it had baked as hard as if it had lain a full day in the hot sun. Now our Claus became a dressmaker as well as a toy maker. He cut the lavender silk and nearly sewed it into a beautiful gown that just fitted the new dolly. And he put a lace collar around its neck and pink silk shoes on its feet. The natural color of baked clay is a light gray, but Claus painted the face to resemble the color of flesh, and he gave the dolly Bessie's brown eyes and golden hair and rosy cheeks. It was really a beautiful thing to look upon, and sure to bring joy to some childish heart. While Claus was admiring it, he heard a knock at his door, and little Mary entered. Her face was sad, and her eyes red with continued weeping. "Why, what has grieved you, my dear?" asked Claus, taking the child in his arms.
I've broke my tat," sobbed Mary.
"How?" he inquired, his eyes twinkling.
I dropped him and broke his tail off, and then I dropped him and broke off his ear, and now him's all spoilt."
Claus laughed. "Never mind, Mary, dear," he said. "How would you like this new dolly instead of a cat?" Mary looked at the silk-robed dolly, and her eyes grew big with astonishment.
"Oh, Claus!" she cried, clapping her small hands together with rapture. "Can I have that beautiful lady?"
"Do you like it?" he asked.
"I love it," said she. "It's better than tats."
"Then take it, dear, and be careful not to break it." Mary took the dolly with a joy that was almost reverent, and her face dimpled with smiles as she started along the path toward home. End of chapter 5.